One of my favourite scenes in all cinema.
Is it from one of your favourite films?
If it helps you, I could sing a little bit of the backing score.
Okay.
Da 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 da.
Was it one of the Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I can't see how anyone could have any favourite scene. I can't think of anything that happened in any of those films.
Well, King Théoden, who is the King of Rohan, you remember him?
No.
He says the horn of Helm Hammerhand shall sound in the deep one last time. Let this be the hour when we draw swords together. Fell deeds awake, now for wrath, now for ruin, and the Red Dawn! Remember the Red Dawn?
No.
Oh.
Who the Red Dawn? Is that like a gang of weird little demons?
Yeah, they're a gang from the film the Warriors. Remember when the lady gets on the disc jockey? She says, "A little message for you all out there tonight. Stay safe. The Red Dawn are coming." You remember that?
Hey there, boppers.
Yeah.
The baseball boys are coming in from the West and are pretty darn angry at those.
Yeah.
Gigolo Juggalos.
That's a weird film, isn't it? I have a weirdly specific memory of watching my cousin Martin play through the Warriors video game, which looked really boring.
I don't think people really think of it anymore. When I was growing up, it was one of those films that was thrown in. It was always in the film magazines of kind of like cult classics.
Yeah.
You know, you start buying your Total Films and Empires and Neon, sadly now departed film magazine. But basically, when you're a teenager, late teens, how to catch up on films, what to watch.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Deliverance, you know, all the, you know, your Kubricks,
etc. How to be the person you're trying to be.
Well, yeah, how to join in the conversation. But then I watched all of them, and I never had to prove my credentials with anyone.
No.
When I'm talking about film, and no one ever brought up The Warriors or Deliverance.
Yeah.
So
you know why though? Because you guys who are trying to catch up on that stuff, you're all so busy in the house watching the old films that there's no one around to talk about them. So everyone in the pub is just talking about Barbie. You've been to the pub recently? You heard them talking? They're all talking about Barbie. That's everyone in the pub.
No.
In every pub.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you're trying to say, what this bit is about, but like maybe it's a slam on Barbie. I don't know. I haven't seen Barbie, but...
No, not at all.
People can talk about Barbie if they want.
People have been talking about it, and I've not heard a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind.
I haven't been in the pub that much because I'm trying not to...
Try not to talk about Barbie. I know. It's real hard, man, to not talk about Barbie.
Well, when Barbie comes up and I just say I haven't seen it, and I ask, is it good? And everyone says, yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty funny. Just like, it's like the Lego movie, but live action.
I thought we were going to do a whole bit there where we used talking about Barbie as an analogy for drinking.
Oh, right. I didn't see that. Didn't see that's where you were going.
What if we were to try it now? But people will be in on it because we're not illusionists. We're not going to cut this bit out.
But what's the thing? Like doing Barbie? Or Barbie's a drink? Having Barbie?
You know, you said I've been trying not to go to the pub recently because I've been trying not to. And I said talk about Barbie. And you said that's absolutely right. Because I think talking about Barbie, maybe it's not having all the impact on my life that I want it to. You know?
Right, but then people might genuinely just think I'm talking about Barbie. And like they're quite protective about that film, I think. And I don't even want to get in and say anything about it because I haven't seen it, and B, if I had, I certainly wouldn't say I didn't like it.
Until the end, I thought you were doing like a double meta analogy lean in.
Yeah, we see.
Where
I'm
you
not.
Were suggesting that all of our audience had alcohol problems and they were a bit protective of it, and
yeah, but
you were actually talking about Barbie.
Yeah, I'm not that clever, but also you're making this conversation really difficult to have because you're playing like three-dimensional chess and I haven't even got my board
you're
out.
You're playing checkers, yeah.
I mean, that was the obvious thing to say and I deliberately avoided saying that.
Oh.
But don't worry, I mean, that's, right. You know, you're the kind of man whose cultural touch point of the moment is Barbie.
Yeah.
You know, so you are going to say the trite thing as well. That's just who you are.
I'm a trite guy.
I wouldn't be reaching for like, well, all the kids are talking about Barbie and they're on the TikToks.
No, not the kids, all the people in the pubs.
Yeah, there you go. That's what all the people in the
18
pubs.
Plus, buddy. 21 if you're in America. Although I don't know if there are any pubs there.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, that's the lane that you've sat in and you're going to cruise in that for quite some time.
Forever, for the rest of my life. That's the lane I live in. I look at other lanes and I think, why would you want to be there? This is my lane. Me and all the people talking about Barbie.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to be the host. And Joe prefers to be the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Hello, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmond, and joining me as ever is the old Mr. Google Man. He knows all about Google and his brain is full of algorithms, but the algorithms all go into, like, the toilet. Joe Devine.
Well, hello, I'm Adam Richmond here, and here's your letterboxed for fury.
On today's episode, we're going to talk about the 2014 war flick, World War II flick, Fury, directed by David Ayer. And starring Bradley Pitts, Sheila Burfs, and Logan Lermans.
Talk about David Ayer, Adam Richmond. I think we need to find David Water to throw on this film, because this is hot.
It's, let's go to the letterbox.
Oh, yes, please. What's letterbox have to say about this?
Well, it has to say it's 135 mins, a runtime I do not like.
Too long, too long.
It is too long. And here is the blurb. War never ends quietly. In the last months of World War II, as the Allies make their final push in the European theatre, a battle-hardened US Army sergeant named War Daddy commands a Sherman tank called Fury and its five-man crew on a deadly mission behind enemy lines. Outnumbered and outgunned, War Daddy and his men face overwhelming odds in their heroic attempts to strike at the heart of Nazi Germany.
Yep.
And that's what I had to say. This was a film you got me on, or did I get you on?
You got me on it.
I got you on it.
Yeah.
Did you see this when this came out in 2014? I was surprised. I asked you a question, and then I'm going to carry on speaking.
No, that's fine.
I think I'm renowned for.
Something that you'd give me a hard time about, but I never give you a hard time about it because I'm a good guy.
Yeah, and I'm a hypocrite.
Yeah.
I WhatsApped you saying, this came out in 2014. That means it's nearly 10 years old. That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
And you said, no, man. That seems exactly right. That seems exactly like this film is 10 years old. Do you want to speak to that?
I would like to speak to that. But first up, I'm just going to quibble something that you've said there.
Quibble, quibble, quibble.
I would never say no to you like that. I would never start a reply to you by saying no. That's not who I am, okay? Now, I'm just scrolling back up to try and find...
Me too.
...what it was there, because I didn't say that. Fury is 10 years old next year.
Yeah.
Crazy. And I said, that does not get me! Exclamation mark. I feel like that's exactly right. It feels 10 years ago.
That sentence is absolutely baffling to me. I read that a few times. That does not get me. Like, not only is the exclamation mark completely, like, make it read like you're insane.
That's why you read it like, that does not get me.
That does not, like, you're Borat or something.
That
what does
not
that mean?
Get me.
That does not get
it
me.
It means, what you is, know, like, you've been got by that, right? Like, it's like a, you know, it's like a Fury, David Ayer has come up and tapped on your shoulder. You've turned around, you've gone, oh, it's David Ayer. And he's gone, hi, Adam Richmond. And where's he from? America? Is he from America?
He's from America.
He's gone, hey, Adam. And you've gone, what are you doing here? And he says, I'm here to tell you that Fury is going to be 10 years old next year. Do you think that's crazy? And then you go, wow, that's really got me. That's kind of got me in the time memory bank area. And then you've told me about it. And I've gone, well, that's not got me in the time but memory bank area at all. I feel like that makes complete sense.
Yeah, but it's like you're answering a question I haven't said. I haven't said, does this get you? This totally got me. I've just said it's 10 years old. Isn't crazy? So it's yes or no.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I'm not answering whether it's crazy or not. I'm just going to say, that does not get me. Like, I'm not trying to say whether...
Well, I'm saying no. Immediately. Like, it doesn't, I don't think that's crazy.
No, you're not. You're saying, that does not get me.
That does not get me.
That does not get me.
Yeah.
Does not get me. That does not... That doesn't get me.
That does not get me.
How about I'm surprised? I'm not surprised.
The thing is it because you're saying, do you feel like I'm suggesting that you've been got by something, been taken in, been tricked? Is that why you're having a problem with this? Because you feel like I'm saying someone's got you. And you now you feel like maybe I think you're stupid or something. Or you feel like you've been got by someone, right? You're feeling vulnerable, like someone's got one over on you.
That is the subtext of what that comment you've said. That's what you've done. I don't feel got. And then you brought that into the game.
And here I am saying, listen, man, you've been got. Well, open your eyes, yeah? Grasp the lemon. You've been got big time. Because it is 10 years ago. And if you don't see that, then you have been got. That's how you feel. That's what you feel I'm saying, right? Whereas what I'm saying is, that does not get me.
Yeah, and it's just a really weird phrasing.
I didn't know how to reply to that text message, because also the other thing you'll notice is I replied 1 minute later, but I started typing about, I don't know, 5 seconds after I got it, and I deleted about two other things because I was like, what do I actually say to this? Because I don't feel anything about what you're saying. I don't feel the same as you in what you're saying here. So what do I say? Which is why eventually I came to, that does not get me, which is, you're right, it's a sort of backwards way of saying it.
It's not that. I mean, I said nothing. It didn't get you, so you should have probably you shouldn't have replied.
I should have ignored you.
It didn't warrant a response. It should have been tumbleweeds, my friend.
Right. Except you followed up with, great, this is a great topic. What does 10 years feel like?
Well, it doesn't feel like 10 years to me, right? And I was taking, I think I make fun about you about the passage of time and how we experience it.
Yeah.
I've got very little memory of where I saw this. I would have seen it in the cinema. I can't remember where I was, who I was.
Well, hold on. What does 10 years feel like to you then, if it's not this? If it's not Fury, what is it? What do you think was 10 years ago? Pick a film that you think you saw in 2013, and I'll look it up and see when it was.
Watchmen. Watchmen feels like 10 years ago.
The film.
From, yeah.
Okay, it was 14 years ago.
Great. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I knew it was more than that, but it feels like I'm thinking, that's 10 years ago.
Do you know what feels like 10 years ago to me? Can you Google this one?
Okay, yeah.
Blue Ruin.
Oh, man, that feels like 20 years ago to me.
That's a great film, man. I love that film.
That was, yeah. For all your, you know, your shit with memory, but then you're great with the passage of time. This film is a World War II film. It's an American World War II film. Now, most, you know, the Americans came in very late in the old World War II. Let's not bring back up old wounds. You know, what's done is done. They came, they saw, they conquered, yeah. They saved the day.
And they brought neoliberalism to our shores.
The American war film, this film is a World War II film, an American one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an underdog story.
Yes.
And given we know who wins the war, and given we know that America is a, you know, was then and is now a superpower, what are your feelings about this story positioning Americans as the underdog? And do you think there's anything interesting in that?
I do. I think there are two interesting things in that. I feel fine about it. The first thing that I think is interesting about it is it's probably a reflection of reality, right? So there's an expectation that because in school you are taught that the Second World War started in 1939 and ended in 1945. When you're thinking about the war in your head and thinking about the events that took place during that war, you start to kind of get a little lazy and think, well, if it's sort of halfway through 44 onwards, you know, it's kind of dying down, right? That's not really what happened. As the text says, they've entered Germany and they've encountered the most fanatical resistance yet. I think that's nice to make a film about that, something that people might not have thought about very often. That leads me to the second thing that I find interesting about it. These two are connected, Adam. War films, particularly about World War II, World War I, they're all connected and they're all made in the context of the others that already exist, right? So you can't just redo, I mean, you can if you're making Saving Private Ryan, but you can't just redo Main War. You know, you've got to find a new angle on it. You've got to find a new story. You have to look for the thing that's untold, hence why Fury will have come to this specific tank battle, technical tank battling, which I hadn't seen in a film before. And also, yeah, the notion that it's 45 and it's still, you can still lose your life. But they all kind of, they all theoretically exist creatively isolated from each other. They are a film unto themselves and their own universe, and that's it. Like every movie, right? Except sequels. But that's not the reality. The reality is that every Second World War film made has to kind of at least creatively acknowledge every previous Second World War film ever made. And so you end up in these kind of increasingly niche environments with a tone that maybe suits the sort of the time in which it's being made.
Isn't that the same of any genre film? Because I was thinking, like, I mean, if you think of the boxing picture.
Yeah.
All boxing pictures exist within the context of every other boxing film ever made. I mean, in particular, they're all in the shadow and will have seen and reflect the existence of Raging Bull.
That's true, and they'll be influenced by, and they'll have to acknowledge it and you know, work around it. But those aren't all based on the same real world event, and so I think it's slightly different. I think there's an added layer of complexity when it comes to the Second World War. I mean, is there another event in the world that's had as many things made about it as the Second World War?
Well, maybe not, but I guess it definitely scans to something like the Vietnam War film when you see any, as soon as you know the idea of one coming out again, you think, well, I've seen this.
And yet you've seen them all. Fury, right? Because what Fury actually shows us is something very different. The underdog element of it is kind of required at the beginning to explain why they are encountering such significant resistance, but also they're isolated throughout almost the entirety of the film. There are a few war films I've seen that are so clear from the beginning that this is about brutality. This film is about how war brutalizes people. Because within the first 30 seconds, you see Brad Pitt stab someone in the eye with a knife, right?
Well, it feels like they're making them the underdogs because they are. It's a storytelling kind of affectation. They're doing it for the audience, so the audience can like these guys. These are horrible men,
yeah.
Who commit. They're in war, so obviously they've got to kill people. But also, they treat German women, particularly around the midpoint, horribly, and it's reflecting reality, and the film has to show that reality. But then at the same time, I feel there's this Hollywood thing where they're like, well, we've got to like these guys, so and like how do you, you know, he does talk about like. This is how Hollywood does it. Save the cat. Brad Pitt stabs a guy in the eye. What does he do? Unbridles the horse and strokes it. And this white, lovely horse gallops off.
Yeah.
It just feels like it really wants to show masculinity and the brutal things that men do in the name of war. So the cynical side of me is feeling that the film is saying war has brutalized them. They're doing horrible things, but they're doing it for you. And that's... You know, we should reckon with that, and maybe we should, but there is a certain honesty and brutality to the. There's a certain honesty to how it portrays these men. It doesn't shy away from that. So you know, in that regard, it's a good film, and I'm glad it's about. But I don't know. I'm just I don't know. It wasn't fun. It's not fun to watch.
No, I mean, it's extremely unpleasant to watch. But I think that's kind of the point. I mean, I don't feel as though it's saying to the audience, we're doing this for you. I think the crescendo of the film is at the very end, after the Norman, the character Norman played by Logan Lerman, he is discovered in the tank by the Americans. They've just put up this great battle. They've kind of, you know, all of his friends are dead. The Americans lift him out and they put him in the back of a van and they say, "Hey guy, did you know you're a hero?" And the door shuts. And it's like, yeah, fucking who cares? What was the point in that? You know, that seems really stupid and pointless. And, you know, particularly because like moments before, a lovely young German lad shined a torch under the tank, saw him there, didn't give his position away. You know, the whole film is kind of saying like, this is what happens. This is the brutality of war. And this is not the brutality of war. This is how war brutalizes men. This is how men have to be or feel as though they have to be, not just to the enemy, but to each other. Like the whole film is about teaching Norman, the young desk clerk who's been drafted in to sit in a tank and shoot Germans, teaching him how he has to survive war like these other men have survived war, which is to be entirely brutal, to have no you know, emotional response to anything, to hide any emotional response that you might have, to feel no remorse whatsoever. And you know, in a sense, what happens is that they teach him to do that over the course of a week, and then they all die, and he gets called a hero, and it seems completely pointless. Like there's no. That's what I think the film is about. That's in relation to the broader context of World War II films. That's what this one offers us.
Do you want to play the Bradley Pitt game?
The Bradley Pitt game? Do I ever?
Do you want to play the William Bradley Pitt game?
I'd absolutely love. I want to get deep in that Will Pitt.
There was a fun game, though, we did on the TikTok, where the TikTok gives you a film and you have to assign it a rank from 1 to 10.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't know what film's going to come.
Oh.
So for example, you've got... You're basically you're building a top 10 list, but you're doing it to a certain extent blind.
I'm putting numbers down now so that I can see it as I'm going.
Yeah, this is, I mean, already. Now, there are quite a lot of films in Pitt's filmography. And I whittled them down to not only films I think you would have seen, which was very easy to cross films off, but also like, what would be worth, you know, I didn't write down any shit as well, but that still left me with about 22 films.
Okay.
Now, should we do a top 10 or should we span it out to top 15?
No, let's do top 10.
Let's do top 10.
Yeah.
Okay, World War Z.
Oh, I mean, I'm going to put that in at 8. I have seen that film and it's fine, and I like that Peter Capaldi shows up in it, but, you know, broadly, whatever.
Moneyball.
Oh, Moneyball. I reckon it's safe to put Moneyball in at number 2. There could be another better one that I'm forgetting about, so I'm putting it in at 2 there.
Christmas, that's a big 2.
Yeah.
Okay, 7.
7 has to go in at 7. Also, because I don't really care about the film.
I mean, that's crazy that you'd say that.
Well, you know, it's just not for me.
Okay, I mean, it's a near-perfect film.
Yeah, but, you know, perfectly fucking boring, if you ask me.
Fight Club
is, I like that film, but I'm putting it in at number 5 because I'm very bored of it also similarly by now.
Christ alive.
Yeah.
Troy.
Well now, where does Troy go? I mean, does Troy, this is going to be really stupid, but I'm going to put Troy in at number 6 above 7.
Yeah, really, really stupid.
Because it's my tier list.
Yeah, absolutely. This is your list.
Yeah.
You'll have to defend it.
Yeah.
Interview with a Vampire.
Oh, I like Interview with a Vampire. That's a really bad film. I'm going to put that in at number 4.
So let's go for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
That's the sort of quite fairly recent one, isn't it? The recent,
pretty recent.
What do you call him?
Tarantino.
Do you know, I really didn't like it the first time I watched it, and then I watched it a second time, and I put little Tarantino to one side and just tried to enjoy the film. And I did enjoy it. It's quite a good film. And unfortunately, I can either put it in 1 or 3 or 9 or 10. So it's going to have to go in at 3. That's not ideal, but that's where it's going.
Hey, that's the nature of the game, isn't it?
That's how the game works.
How many more films have I got to read out?
Three more. I'm looking. What I've done is I've left open number one, number nine, and number 10.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
Ad Astra.
Ad Astra is going in at number 9. I was a little bored by that film, but I did watch it in 4K Ultra HD as the first film I watched on my new TV, so that was kind of fun.
Burn After Reading.
Oh, thanks for giving me a solid 10, by which I mean it's going at the bottom of the list.
This will be fun, so I can just pick a film to make you look like a moron to go at number 1.
I was thinking that when I told you what I had left. Isn't normally Curious Case of Benjamin Button, you're gonna say.
The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Oh no.
Is that your favourite film?
It says here that it is.
Oh, that's embarrassing. Read the list out.
So from bottom to top?
Yeah, these are your favourite Brad Pitt films.
These are my favourite Brad Pitt films, guys. Number 10, Burn After Reading. I love the Coen brothers. Number 9, Ad Astra, because it has that old guy, Tommy Lee Jones, in the film. Is it Tommy Lee Jones? It's got someone in that film. And then World War Z is in there because at number 8, because I love Peter Capaldi and zombies. 7 is in at 7, because I'm kind of a lol Rufflecopter kind of guy. Troy's in at number 6, because it's the best war movie of all time. Fight Club is there in at number 5, you know, because who could see the ending coming? Interview with the Vampires there, because Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise in at number 4, they're the best pair of actors of all time. And then Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, because it's a Tarantino film, and obviously I love Tarantino because he's the best director, and anyone that says anything else should be murdered. Moneyball's there because it's the perfect film to watch on a plane.
You've stopped saying the numbers.
Oh, I stopped saying the numbers. I'm sorry. In at number 2, it's Moneyball because it's the perfect length to watch on a plane flight to Spain. But my favourite Brad Pitt film of all time, guys, in at number 1, is The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. Do you know why? Because I like my ladies older.
Oh, that's gross.
It's gross. Although Cate Blanchett is a fine, fine actor. Do you want to hear my favourite quote from the film?
Can I guess? This is going to be another game. Can I guess your favourite quote from the film?
Yeah, I think you might get it right.
Ideals are peaceful. History is violent.
There it is. That's it. I thought it doubles...
Wait a minute.
Hey, it's my bit. I'm doing my bit, and then you can do your bit.
No, no.
I brought it up.
No, but I turned it into a game.
Okay, fine. Go on, do your bit then.
I'm just going to say, this is just a callback, Joe. Just let me do the callback. This is because I know, you know, you're Johnny Obvious. This is the little road you sit in. That's all I wanted to say.
You just wanted to say that you knew I'd say that quote. Because I like the most obvious quote.
It was just a little callback to the thing we just took. I took the piss out of you at the start of the episode. Uh-huh. I just thought it would. And if I said that after your long bit, it wouldn't have worked.
Well, guess what? My bit was short as well, and I'm going to cut that bit out at the beginning, so your bit doesn't make any sense. Now listen to my bit. Yeah.
Okay.
Ready for my bit?
Yes. Fine. Jesus, you've been talking over me all episode, and yet now I'm the arsehole.
Ideals are peaceful. History is violent. That's the quote that we are talking about now. Yeah? I just wanted to say it again, just in case anyone forgot it from a few minutes ago, because it's very...
Just in case you cut out me guessing it.
Yeah.
You fucking git. I'm not going to let you have the clean take. I'm not going to let you have a clean take.
Now listen, it's a very poignant quote. Ideals are peaceful. History is violent.
You piece of shit.
And that quote came... That's in the film. That's my favourite quote of the film, Adam. Didn't know if you knew that. But...
What's the quote again? I don't think I remember.
You
want to
hear the
quote
one more time? Ideals are peaceful. History is violent.
Hey, who says that? That's really profound.
I think it was Donald Trump. Anyway, I like this. Actually, that kind of works for the thing I was going to say. Because on the one hand, I think, well, that's a nice quote. For Pitt to say in this film, that's a sort of and it's also justification, isn't it? But then actually, when you read it again, ideals are peaceful, history is violent. It sounds an awful lot like what all alt-right people say on Twitter when they say feelings aren't real, mate. Yeah, facts are. That's basically what it is. Ideals are peaceful, History is violent. History is real. And that's what actually happens, is violence. And you can have all ideals all you want, but actually they're just your feelings and they don't matter. I thought, oh, it's quite a... That's a bit of a, you know... That's a sort of like a kind of, you know, a zeitgeisty thing.
Bradley Pitts, he improvised that on the day. It wasn't even in the script.
Is that... Are you serious?
Deadly serious.
He improvised that?
Well, I mean, improvised. He probably was thinking about it for ages, or called up a writer friend and said, hey, man, I want to say something really fucking profound. But it wasn't in David Ayer's script, and David Ayer reportedly said that Pitt came up with it on the day. That doesn't mean he just popped into Pitt's head.
I want to believe that it did, though. I'm happy to believe that it did, if he improvised it.
But, you know, Pitt says it so sadly. He doesn't deliver it. It could easily be a thing that would be co-opted. I think you're right, you know, by the alt-right. But
He's not saying it in that way. It just sounded, you know, strikingly similar to something that, you know, an apologist for any number of people might say.
Hey, I tell you what, it would work really well in the old tea towel game, wouldn't it?
It would work well in the tea towel game.
The alt-right tea towel game. Yeah.
Is this a quote from a film, or is this something that an alt-right person says on Twitter? Yeah.
No, is this on an alt-right person's tea towel?
Do you think they have? They probably could make a lot of money.
It's always tea towels. Yeah. The tea towel game is the tea towel game.
Maybe one of the usual suspects can start selling tea towels with those sorts of slogans on them. You know, like, fuck your feelings, here's my facts. You know,
what,
that sort
like
of thing.
Gabriel Byrne or Stephen Baldwin?
Who's Gabriel Byrne?
Sorry, you said one of the usual suspects.
Oh, that's the sort of joke I would make. It's a shame I don't know better the actors in The Usual Suspects. Otherwise, that would have been, yeah... Real good.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
good stuff.
It's humour.
It's humour. Humour. Here's how it works. It's humour. Okay, box office game. For Fury. What do you reckon the estimated budget is for this film?
Well, they've shot on location. They've spent a pretty penny. There's big explosions. There's a big old cast.
Is this our first war film?
Well, modern war film. There's some war stuff in... A lot of war in Kingdom of Heaven.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of war in King of Arthur.
I don't think of historical wars as real, though, you know, because the people didn't matter.
Yeah. $80 million.
Not far off. The estimated budget here is $68 million.
Okay.
So pretty good.
I thought 60 was too low. That's pretty good.
Yeah. For what they've achieved here. The filming locations, actually, apparently they filmed it in Oxfordshire in England.
Wow.
Which is, that's good for me, actually, because when I was watching it, I did at one point think, well, Germany looks a lot like England, doesn't it? And actually, I've never thought that about Germany before. But now I can see here, it was England. Very specific sort of grass hedge thing we've got going here.
Yeah.
In England.
How many explosions do you think are too many explosions?
What, in a film or just in normal war?
In a film.
Oh.
How many times do you need to see a shell being loaded into a cannon?
What they don't tell you is that the tank shells don't explode. I mean, that's what I want. I was expecting them to explode every time they hit another tank, but they don't. They just go through it like a big bullet, which makes more sense, doesn't it? Because they're not all like bombs.
They're not all bombs.
Suddenly the enemy tank would just kind of stop, and then you'd say, look, there's two big holes in it there. And you'd think, what? So, what have they killed? Is that everyone in there is dead, or it's just stopped, or what? Bit of an anticlimax, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think it grossed at its opening weekend, US and Canada? October 19th, 2014.
I don't think people flocked to see this flick. Despite you got, you know, Brad Pitt, we talk about who can open a film and who can't open a film. By and large, I think Bradley Pitt, hit and miss sometimes.
Pitt opens, feels, surely.
He can, that's the thing. Sometimes, but then sometimes he really, really can't.
Well, before you answer, what would be like, what would be fine for this? What would be a fine opening weekend with the 70 million budget?
What I feel is, this isn't fact, I feel like it's needs to be getting like 20, 25.
Right, yeah. So what do you think it got?
Let's say 20. Yeah, 20. I think maybe it did okay.
24.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. I have a feeling it didn't quite have the legs. I don't think it had the legs, Joey Jojo.
Well, talk about legs. Gross worldwide. What do you guess for here?
It's not a flopperino. It's perfectly fine. I think it would have done adequate business. Pitt, like Clooney, he knows no territory. Yeah. I mean, territory... He knows all of the territories. It's the opposite.
He knows all territories.
He opens all doors.
He made that film in Nepal, remember?
That's 7 years in Tibet.
Yeah, that's not Nepal.
No, that's Tibet.
Yeah.
7 years in Nepal. So what's it going to make? It cost 70. Oh, I tell you what, and it would have spent a pretty penny on marketing.
Oh, not marketing.
I reckon it probably made a low. It's got to say mid to high hundreds.
Low mid to high hundreds.
Yeah, I'm good. Let's say 170.
You think it did 170?
Is that low? Ugh, I don't feel like it did Boffo.
What would Boffo be here?
Well, Boffo's going to be like
over 200.
Yeah, triple its. You know, you've got to factor in the marketing budget. You really do.
Well, but we don't know what that is.
It would be at least 40, you know, at least half.
So it's okay, so let's say it's 40. So the 110 is what they spent on the film. What's Boffo? If you make 100 mil on top of that, is that Boffo?
Yeah, that's double your money.
Okay.
Yeah, that's double your money. That's got to be. That sounds like Boffo.
I mean, making $100 million profit. That's Boffo.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know why I'm thinking like it's not.
So what do you think it did? Do you think it didn't do Boffo anyway?
I don't. I have a feeling like it was just perfectly fine. Finally, it did fine, and it was finally fine.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of thinking it was 100. So yeah, maybe 170 is too high. Let's go 150.
Mate, it's Boffo.
Is it?
It's 212.
Oh, that is Boffo.
$212 million this film took gross worldwide. And a very, very well done to them, you know?
No, I don't want to say well done to them.
I'm saying it.
Well.
Well done to you, Columbia Pictures, QED International and L Star Capital.
Like, maybe you wanted to talk about your week in films?
I've been a bit lazy recently and I've mostly been watching TV, which I know we're not allowed to talk about on here. So instead, let me proffer to you the one film that I have seen. And it is a rewatch of Human Traffic. Remember that one?
Saw that in Bloody High Wycombe.
Wow.
And I remember really, 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 really enjoying it. It had me from the Fat Boy Slim scored opener.
Yeah.
I'd never heard that song. But I thought, wow.
What is this?
This is music. This is good.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I was never and never will be and never have been into clubbing.
There goes my bit.
It was good. And then the acting's pretty rubbish, but Danny Dyer is so much fun in it.
Oh.
I tried to rewatch it recently and it's very, very ropey and hasn't stood up very well. Mm-hmm. But what year was that? 97?
Something like that. Yeah.
I think 16 or something. It was a good fun flick. Anyway, sorry. So you rewatched it. How was it?
Do you know what? I've rewatched it. I think it might be my fourth viewing, maybe, over about, you know, 15 years or something. And I like the film less every time I watch it, but I like Danny Dyer more every time I watch it. He's so good, man. He's just absolutely terrific in that film. And I think, you know, what I probably missed the first couple of times I watched it, the range of his performance is just terrific. He's so young in it as well. I watch him now and I think, this guy is a fucking superstar. And now, I guess is he on EastEnders now? Still on EastEnders? He's kind of around, isn't he?
He's got to be surely top of the list of like someone who comes out seemingly pure talent and then what? Flushes it down the toilet or what?
I don't know what happened. I was going to ask you.
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. Do you agree though? Like it to what he was and who he is.
Yeah.
He's just a face. He's a celebrity face now. Fit for, I don't know, celebrity Big Brother or celebrity Come Dine With Me. And he's got very distracting hair plugs. And he's a persona.
Well, I mean, Human Traffic was his first film, it looks like. It was 99, by the way, apparently.
99.
So you were a little older. And then the next film that I recognise the name of is Mean Machine in 2001. So that's a step in one direction, isn't it?
Well, that's a lad. That's a Vinnie Jones football thing. And then he must be in Football Factory soon after that.
So this is the thing. I mean, I suppose then he does The Business, which is sort of, you know, which is quite that's a fun film. Yeah,
he's good in that. But then it feels like he's then, maybe it's in part the fact that he's stuck in, he's a very English actor.
Yeah.
And he's stuck in this tiny little parochial film industry that only can really make a couple of films. At that time, I mean, still, like, it's always period dramas and rom-coms.
Yeah.
And when he's coming through up then, it was hooligan films.
It was lad movies. Yeah.
But he doesn't make the Ray Winston leap across the pond. He doesn't make the Bob Hoskins leap across the pond.
He doesn't. No.
I mean, Ray Winston only made that leap, I'd say, fairly late in his career. He's not making it Danny's tender age of whatever it was. But, yeah, I guess he's a big fish in a tiny pond, and then he just starts to...
Well, he was also Ray Winston was also in a series of, like, absolutely incredible, you know, taken very seriously films. I mean, Danny Dyer is in Adulthood in 2008, which is slightly different to those kind of lad movies that we were talking about. But I do think that you know, the thing that's, I suppose, for me, sad about it is that what he does in Human Traffic, he plays that lad. He's very friendly. He's a kind of non-violent. He's not, certainly not a hooligan, and he's the son of a police chief in Human Traffic. So he's kind of got this strange situation at home, and then he's out taking drugs all night with his clubbing friends. But he does the paranoid and vulnerable drug addict who wants to quit taking drugs extremely well. He does the kind of underside, the soft underbelly of the lad thing really well. So it's a shame then that the next film he's in is Mean Machine and Football Factory, because I actually think, you know, what Ray Winston's done really well is not necessarily with his character portrayals, but he plays that character in films that are examining those environments as opposed to reflecting them and not to say that Mean Machine is glorifying them, but I mean, you know, if there's a better way of saying it, you put it together yourself. Because Danny Dyer, he shows that he has that vulnerable range, and that's the thing that makes him so watchable in this film. It's not him doing the big lad joke, doing the big laugh, dancing around, talking about Star Wars. I mean, the most tired bits of the film are the bits when they're high and talking about Star Wars or talking about something, and it's all very funny if you're a part of the scene, and then when you're, you know, not or older, it's just very dull. Whereas Danny Dyer the next day on the come down, he displays a vulnerability which is just so compelling to watch. And I honestly think if you put him in a film with Kathy Burke the next year instead of in Mean Machine, maybe his career is completely different, right? Because he's clearly a very talented actor.
Well, yeah, he was. But I guess that soft underbelly, it just progressively, it doesn't come out. It's either not written for him or he starts avoiding it.
Yeah.
He starts doing that TV show, Danny Dyer, the hardest men, like, documentary type thing he does. And then it all becomes about him being a hard man and going to, like, it just seems like as a person that softness just, like, what he wanted to leave that unexplored and, like, have that not be a part of his persona, or, like, you know.
So I don't know, man. Like, I feel as though there was a different career path there. Not to say that he desperately wanted to take it or not, but I think he had the range to do it if he chose to.
Yeah, I guess I think he was probably failed by toxic lad culture of the time, and then also just the very narrow band of the kinds of films that were made in this country. And I can't imagine he would have had to have been, yeah, plugging away, maybe not doing that many films and maybe having to starve a bit.
Yeah.
And waiting for like, keep chipping away and then maybe get noticed by some hot young American director to kind of say, oh, get this English kid over.
Yeah.
He can be...
He's a star. He's got what we need in our movie. I mean, do you think he could do it now? Do you think, like, what if there was a perfect script written for him, his character now, who he is now, to that, you know, because Hollywood loves those stories, right? The kind of revival of someone, the showing of that promise. We've just been through it with Brendan Fraser in The Whale. Could Danny Dyer have his own Whale?
I went to the cinema yesterday.
What did you see?
I haven't been to a cinema. Well, we went to see Jurassic Park a couple of weeks ago. And I went to see Past Lives, which we've mentioned.
We talked about that.
Did we? Yeah. Oh, yeah, we did. We talked about that one. So, but I went to see... Guess what I went to go and see?
Punisher.
It's not called Punisher.
Punisher 3.
It's called The Equalizer 3.
Oh, Equalizer, yeah.
But it's directed by our good friend Antoine Fuqua.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Anton Corbin.
No. This is all connecting. This is exactly where I was going to go.
Okay.
Because at Equalizer 3, I kind of was, I dismissed them when we chatted about King Arthur as perfectly fine. When I was like, I was sort of slagging Fuqua's work off.
Yeah.
The Equalizer films are his best films. They're very, like, one and two are really, really solid. They're exactly what they should be. Just really, really entertaining, well-made action films. You know, bad guys doing wrong and Denzel Washington being, like, cold as ice, killing those fuckers.
Yeah.
It's just really, really so satisfying. And they're very, I was, as I was in the cinema watching it and like the title came up, Equalizer 3 behind it, it did give me that feeling of, there was a bit of shame of, because these are the kinds of films I think people take the piss out of.
Mm.
And certainly like, you know, in the 80s and 90s of like so many sequels, you know, rehashing like shitty kind of action.
When the three comes up behind, you know, that's a take the piss out of it film.
The series is better than that. And I think it would be, it's dismissed out of hand, but they are better than that. So I will say that in their defense.
Mm, mm.
But three finds Robert McCall, the Equalizer. Film opens really strongly, really nicely. He's in, it opens with some sort of Italian mafiosa type, Gomorrah.
What's an equalizer?
Mate, he equalizes shit. If you mess around with good, wholesome people,
uh-huh.
If you're some punk mucking around and you're with some everyday schmoes and Robert McCall is around, man, he's going to...
You're going to get equalised.
He's going to fucking equalise right. You so hard.
He's going to bring that bass down, pop that middle up a little.
So he's a kind of an ex-CIA guy, and the films have been slowly charting his progress to become full equaliser.
Right.
In the first one, he's not really, you know, he's just a driver, and he slowly kind of gets pulled into... learning his equal, he knows at heart he should be an equalizer.
You know, knowing nothing about these films and listening to you describe them, they sound wild. I mean, they sound completely mental.
They're not. They're just very sedate.
Sure.
And they're very not that sedate, but they're just Denzel Washington.
Is it Denzel?
Yeah.
Oh, that's all you needed to say.
Oh, I can't believe you didn't know that.
I don't know that it's Denzel.
You're watching, you get to watch a whole film with Denzel Washington, just...
Yep.
That's it.
No, I'll do that.
Annoyingly, in this film, there's about 20 minutes towards the end of the second act. Films have such a trouble sorting out the second half of the second act, where he isn't even in the film.
And what? I'm like,
this is the Equalizer 3, for fuck's sake. Oh. Anyway.
Any film that's got Denzel in it and he isn't in every scene, is there's done something wrong.
Anyway, this is, opens with McCall in this kind of villa in Sicily.
Denzel. Why'd they give him such a lame name? McCall.
It's based on a TV series.
Can you just say Denzel from now on, though? Not McCall.
It opens, it doesn't open on him. It opens in this Sicilian villa, and all you just see the aftermath of a serious gun battle. The like men with a man with a cleaver in his head.
Oh,
you know, it's blood has been spilled, and this guy, this old guy, is walking through this quiet house, and you're just thinking, man, I think all these guys have been equalized.
Right,
they've been, and when are we gonna meet Denzel? It's a great bit.
This the lingo they use in the film? Do they describe it as equalized?
No, of course not.
That's just you doing that.
Yeah, I
thought maybe there was a law. So when you said before, like, you know, he's not really he knows he needs to become a full equalizer. I was like, is that like becoming a wizard or something?
No,
he's like Harry Potter. He's got to go to equalizer school.
No, there's no such thing as an equalizer.
Oh, he's just a killer.
He's basically the A-team, but all in one. He goes around protecting people who can't protect themselves.
Right.
He's got no links or no ties. He's deeply sad inside. He's seeking human connection, but
he sounds like a psycho.
He is, and that's what he wrestles. That's what he wrestles with. You know, what does it do to a man to equalize so many other men,
or a woman?
In the name, he doesn't equalize women.
He doesn't equalize women.
No,
he only equalizes men.
He's on this mission, and it doesn't really say what it is, but then anyway, for some reason he gets, I won't say why, I don't want to spoil it, but he kind of gets stuck in this small Italian town.
Oh, what, okay. Like in a doorway or something, or what's the nature of him being stuck under a table?
He has to spend a certain amount of time in this small Italian town.
Oh.
Like another film we spoke about very recently.
Oh, Americano. If it was Denzel, it would have been better. I tell you what, man, if the American was Denzel.
Stop it.
Come on.
No, well, stop it.
What are you saying? You're saying no.
You're wrong.
Ugh. Carry on. Who does he equalize in Italy?
Stop shaking the bear. Okay, because the American exists and it works because George Clooney was in it. This is what I'm building up to.
Oh, right.
Denzel now is in, he's in the American. They've done the American, and Denzel has signed off on the story. And this is the same sort of story. And this is the Hollywood version. And it's obviously nowhere near as good. It doesn't even look anywhere near as good as the American, even though it's
they got the wrong Anton. That's the issue.
Well, yeah. Bingo, bango, bongo, to quote my friend Joe Devine. They've got the wrong Anton. It's still very serviceable, but you're still watching. There's a montage of him slowly becoming, a part of this community. You know, he does the same things and builds up. He's a bit injured and he starts building up his strength, and he's friends with the doctor in the same way that in the American Clooney was friends with the priest.
Yeah.
And there's all this, lots of this religious stuff going on. There's a moment after the end of this montage, Denzel seems happy. He's finally found his place. He's where he's supposed to be. This old lady comes over to him and gives him a lemon, a giant lemon. And Denzel's thing is the equalizer is he drinks tea. He ain't no coffee drinker, my friend.
Right.
He is a sophisticat.
Oh, that's one of his things, huh? He drinks tea and not coffee.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
This is a character who's been written.
That's great. That's a great thing.
That's a great thing. And this old lady gives him a giant lemon, and the lemon is so massive. It's got a little sprig and the leaf off it.
It's a large lemon? Is that part of the story, or is it just that the film have been like, let's find the They've just found the biggest lemon they can. No, the DOP's not picking up the lemon on the... We need a bigger lemon, guys.
I think that might be it. Like, how many lemons do you think they went through? And they're like, no, we need to go one up on that lemon.
What, there's a sprig on it?
Mate, there's a sprig
on
it.
And what we're saying, this old woman has climbed a lemon tree. Because you know the big lemon, the best big lemons, they're not at the fucking bottom, man. They're not the low-hanging fruit. That's what you find on the floor. You got to go halfway up or more the lemon tree to get a big, fat, juicy lemon with a sprig on it. Are we thinking this old woman has been up a tree?
Well, that should have been the plot of the film, whereby it turns out that's her tell, and Denzel's super equalizing like antenna go up, and he goes, hang on a sec.
She's been up a tree again.
She turns out to be some kind of evil ninja on his trail, but he gets the jump on her because of the lemon.
Because of the lemon.
Anyway, this is the full stop of the end of this montage sequence. Mm-hmm. She hands him the lemon. And then he's sat at the cafe having his tea when this happens, and sat near him is the very attractive cafe waitress owner who's been flirting with him throughout.
Ah.
And she says, that means they accept you.
Ah, shit, man. I bet that's what he was looking for.
No, but it's like, I know. That's what it means. I don't know why you've had a character say it.
I didn't know. I thought there was something significant about the size of the lemon, or... I'm glad that she was there.
That means you are one of us.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know. I know, because I'm watching a film, and that's what that means, and I've watched a montage.
Oh, wait, so the old woman wasn't bad?
No, of course she wasn't.
Oh, I thought you said she was like an evil ninja.
No, I said that would have been funny. Oh, that would have been funny if it was. Right. Like, she turns out to be the baddie, and that's her tell.
Because I was going to say, yeah. Man.
She's accidentally got a giant lemon.
Wouldn't it be heartbreaking if, you know, you get the giant lemon, and then the cafe woman owner says, that means they accept you, and that's all that he's been looking for, but then it turns out the person that gave it to him was the baddie. I mean, that's like double bad. Not only have you been tricked and made to look stupid, Denzel, but also the town didn't even accept you because the lemon wasn't real.
It would have been funnier if the cafe lady had said, she wants you to stick it up your ass. How you say, because she don't like you.
That's the custom here.
That's the custom.
That's why we're always walking around with the kind of squinting faces, you know, that...
When the ladies give you lemons, you make her the fuck out of here, yeah?
Yeah. Are you clicking your headphones together or something? Because there's this really bad noise that's been happening for a long time.
I was fiddling with some Lego.
Right. You were fiddling with Lego when you were doing a podcast. Talking about a lemon. You were playing with Lego.
Sorry.
Two of the loudest...
Clicking
plastic bits near the microphone. Wow, that's a new low.
Should we play the movies you forgot game?
Yeah, we can, but I've got some bad news for you.
You don't have a list.
I do have a list, but it's only got three films on it because I forgot to make it any longer.
This is the bit in the podcast where one of us lists down some films to see if they can catch out the other person with a movie they'd forgot they'd even watched in the first place.
Yeah.
Last week, I got Joe on Fury, and this week, it's his turn to try and get me out.
Well, let me tell you, Adam, I'm feeling good today.
You banged me first time on Philomena.
I think I'm going to bang you first time here with V for Vendetta.
Now, I think, to be fair to you...
Yeah.
You are using inside information.
Yes, I am.
When I pretty much announced...
On the podcast
that I'd forgot that, and you could get me on that.
Uh-huh.
And I just remembered that I said that. But I have still forgot pretty much everything about that movie. I've so much so that, I mean, I didn't even realise that he had superpowers. All right, see everyone next week. Say bye, Joe.
Bye, Joe.